it's the end of time. And the Mississippi River, she's a gold grind. The interest is up and the stock market down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hey, 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 you're listening to Self-Reliance Expo with Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci, brought to you by Backwoods Home Magazine. How you doing, Colorado?
Good, good. How you been?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm doing... Spring is in the air, finally.
Is that because you leave town?
No, I'm actually still in town, which is a good thing. But I have no idea. It snowed, I guess it snowed 2-3 days ago. And then today it's high 40s, and the birds are out, and the rabbits are out, and you know the chickens are dancing in the coop. I mean, it's a spring day.
Great.
I actually have windows open.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You got your coat on?
No, don't have my coat on, but I mean, especially in my office, believe me, I needed to open the windows. It's been a very long winter. So. How's everything in your neck of the woods?
Good, good. It's beautiful weather here, as usual. We had a surprise snow the other day, but... You know, the roads didn't even, I mean, the roads just got wet and snow stayed on the grass and that was about it. So, as a matter of fact, I went outside, I got a picture of this, I'll have to post it up or something, but I was outside building a snowman with my son Tanner. He was out there building a snowman and it wasn't going quite as planned, so I quickly ran out and I helped him for about 10 minutes and I was barefoot in shorts and a t-shirt in the snow.
You know, overall, that just doesn't surprise me because you don't like wearing, you know, long pants or, you know, heavy clothes anyway. So I'm sure it could have been 10 degrees outside and you could have been, you know, in flip-flops and shorts.
Just admit it. You're jealous.
Yeah, I am. But you know something? I am actually less jealous because, you know, Colorado has, the legislature has moved ahead with the gun laws over there.
Oh, why you gotta ruin my high over here?
Because, you know, because I can't believe that the state of Colorado is leading the charge for the Democratic Party to, you know, you had your, one of your reps, I think her name was Rhonda Fields, I think is the name. I wrote it down here. Hold on. Yeah, Rhonda Fields. And she actually made a statement. She's sick and tired of the bloodshed, you know, because of automatic or assault type weapons and large capacity magazines. And she's enthusiastic that this will get all the government's willing to sign it. Blah 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 blah. And I was just like, wow.
Well, you know, in all fairness, and I do not agree with this at all. But you know. It does kind of make sense that Colorado is leading that charge because this has been the one place I think they said the out of all the mass murders last 10 years or the top 10 of them or something like that, three or four of them have happened here in Colorado. So it's like good grief, you know, over half, you know, almost half of the top 10s have been right here in one state.
Yeah, but I mean, do you honestly think it's going to stop? I guess my whole thing is
no.
So you
agree with any of that?
So you're limiting the capacity of my pistol to 9 rounds or 10 rounds, which means that I just have to stop, you know, 5 rounds earlier and change magazines before I continue on my spree.
Right.
So, really, what is it stopping? It's not doing a damn thing. Which,
right, right. The part that irritates me is, you know, they say, you know, call the cops. The freaking cops never get there in time. Heck, you know, I mean, how many times have we seen drunk drivers on the road call 911, and how long does it take the cops to get there? You know, come on. You know, I don't like the fact that they sit there and try and act like, you know, the cops are the end-all, save-all here.
Well, so Colorado's leading the charge, and then today the Senate Judiciary Committee which is headed by Diane Feinstein. Yeah, Diane Frankenstein, is what I call her.
Yeah, Frankenstein.
Anyway, Democrat from California got a 10-8 vote for renewing the assault weapons ban and the high-capacity magazine round. Basically, what they want to do is reenact the assault ban rules from 1994. And so it's passed. It's going – now, the good news is just because the Senate Judiciary Committee passed it 10-8, it still has to go to the Hill now. And you know, and it'll get fought by the Republicans and everybody else. And so hopefully it won't get passed there. But you know, it's just
that's the problem is they don't pass it. It doesn't, you know, nothing ever happens, and then all of a sudden we close our eyes for a second, or we sneeze, or we focus somewhere else, and then it gets passed 6 months later. You know, it's like what happened? How did I get through? You know, and so. This happens all the time. They constantly push until they get something passed. And you know, none of us are independently wealthy where we can all we have to do is sit here and watch what's going on, you know, constantly. And so it always seems like it slides by, or you get something stupid like this New York City big drink ban or whatever that was.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my problem is that, you know, in 94 the ban was very specific, and so Dianne Feinstein's new bill would ban semi-automatic weapons that fire one round and automatically reload. So that's a ton of weapons, right?
Yeah.
Additionally, if it takes a detachable magazine, it makes it a assault-like weapon. So if it fires around and automatically reloads, and it has a detachable magazine, it automatically would qualify for this. And then on top of that, if it has – or any weapon that has at least one military-like feature, and the example they give is a pistol grip. So, I mean, it's such a broad
law. Right. It's basically taking all the guns.
I mean, and they're specifically naming 157 weapons to start off with a potential 2,258 other ones that could potentially get listed according to those rules.
If it happens, I'll be changing my name to Idaho Ron or Texas Ron or Utah Ron. I am gone. But, you know. Not that I'm saying this or admitting to anything, but just so happens in this month's Backwoods Home magazine, issue number 140 on page 12, it's an article called "Hiding a Gun: The Rules of Three." I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. I didn't hide anything. I'm not hiding anything. Nobody knows anything, but. This is a pretty good article. Has some pretty good ideas.
Yeah. Well, here's what I thought. The only good news I thought of today when I was reading these articles this morning was I should give you a call and start loading up on weapons here in Iowa, because I figured that with this new law being passed, well, it still has one more level to go through in Colorado, but theoretically it's going to go through because you guys are a Democratic House. So
yeah.
When it does, there's going to be a lot of inventory for sale in Colorado. I can't get smack here in Iowa. I mean, it's like anything that goes up for sale is gone as soon as it's up.
I know. Same here. I mean, it's ridiculous. There's no 9mm ammo. There's no 223. There is, believe it or not, still some AK ammo out there. It's pretty. I can still find it pretty often. 22 is all gone. You can never find 22, and if you do, you're only allowed to buy one box.
I'm not having problems with the ammo. I got 1,000 rounds of 9mm and 1,000 rounds of 45 recently, so I'm finding that is not as difficult to find.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can find the guns. The guns they're dumping them online pretty regularly.
Well, that's what I was saying. And with this law being passed,
I can't find the ammo to go with the gun.
Well, there you go. See, what I'll have to do is you'll have to ship me guns, and I'll have to ship you ammo.
There you go.
And we'll both get arrested.
Ah, crap.
Yeah. Well, that's the way it works, right?
Yep, yep.
So, well, let's kind of jump to it. I mean, in case, if you guys can't find guns and can't find ammo, you need to make sure that you're able to survive another way. And to make sure that happens, our guest today will be Butch Tindall. And Butch is the... Well, I don't know. What is Butch's official title? Is he the...
Oh, why you do that to me? He's the man.
Okay, there you go. He's the man. He's the man behind the myth. He's one of the key players at the Plowshare School, which we've been talking about off and on over the last couple of weeks, and Colorado Ron wrangled him up a little bit and got him to be on here today, and we're very excited because they have some just exciting things going on at that school, which is in Waco, Texas.
Yep.
Waco, Texas. And after our break this today, we're going to go ahead and we'll be jumping on with him. And then, of course, at the end of the show, we always do our Homestead Hunter. So
yep.
we'll be hitting that up real quick. And then, I guess the only other thing to really talk about right now is, we have a expo that'll be up in about a month.
Yeah.
Now, I think we'll talk about it again, I'm sure, again at the end of the show. But you're also heading down to check out another show in Nashville.
Yeah, the Nashville Prepper. I'm not sure what the name of the show is.
I think it's Nashville Prepper and Survivalist Expo.
There you go. That's it. Yeah. So I thought I'd go down there and support them. I believe it's their first show, and I thought, well, why not? So I'm flying out. You guys are listening to this on Saturday, but today's Thursday. I'm flying out tomorrow, Friday, and I'll spend a couple days out there in Nashville.
Now, Colorado never is a reason to travel because he'll have his he'll have his little iPad with him, which will tell him where to eat.
That's right.
Yeah, because he'll be hitting diners, and whatever.
That's right. Diners, drive-ins, and dives.
There you go.
They have an app. If you guys are out there, I know you guys are hungry, so I'm just going to tell you, there is an app that you can download that has all the places that that Guy Ferraro, however you pronounce his last name, Ferraro, whatever. Where Guy stopped at these diners, drive-ins, and dives. You can download the app. So anytime I'm out of town, I hit that app up and find some of the best places around.
Yeah, so that's the reason he goes. He was like, oh, well, I could do this. And then he hit the button and said, ooh, look at all the places in Nashville. I got to go down to Nashville and look at this thing. And his wonderful wife, Heather, said, oh, of course, honey, go and work. And he's like, oh, yeah. That's the way it works. And watch his Facebook page, guys, because you'll see at least three photographs of big old plates of food with a big old grin on Colorado Ron.
You know it.
Yeah. All right. Well, you'll have to report back to us and let us know how that is.
Okay.
So I'm on the last two pages of – I wanted to give a shout-out here to – Cade Courtley. We had Cade on about a month and a half ago. So Cade is a Navy SEAL or ex-Navy SEAL who was also part of Bud's program, and he was on Spike TV as a host and also on Discovery Channel Surviving Disasters, and he also does things with CNN and Fox as a specialist. And he wrote a book not that long ago. It's been, I think he said it's been less than a year, that's called SEAL Survival Guide, A Navy SEAL Secrets to Surviving Any Disaster. And so when we talked to him, I ordered the book, and it's about, 400 pages. And
wow.
Yeah, it's,
is
it's
any
a,
good?
You know, yes. But it's not...
you hesitated.
Well, here's the thing, is it's written very similar to, I'm assuming, what his field manual, a lot of this stuff that he has in here is basically out of you know, out of a field manual. So it's written like a set of instructions. So it's not a bad, it's a good book. It's got a lot of really good information in here and how-tos and everything else. I mean, how to build a raft, how to, you know, different survival priorities and how to find certain types of shelters, not making blah, blah, blah with diagrams. And, you know, I've read the whole thing, and which is good because I think I'm backlogged 8 books right now. So I don't read instructions well. I don't follow instructions, so it's hard for me to read them. So, yeah. So I have a hard time reading books like this because they read like stereo instructions. Some people would pick up this book and go, "My God, this is the best book I've ever read. Look at it, all the information." And it did. I mean, the information in here was very useful. It covers so many different topics: improvised weapons from everyday items. How to pack a go bag, escaping from mass shootings, which we had Adam Francis kind of teach a active shooter class at one of our events one time. You know, surviving extreme climates, travel abroad, you know, all kinds of things. Good information, but I tend to like the books that are written from a first person sort of thing. So you're actually it's like you're talking to the person or you're listening to a person talking as opposed to line item lists and how-tos.
Yeah.
So this is definitely more like a manual. I'd call it like a field manual from the experience of a Navy SEAL. Excellent book. Definitely going on the shelf. It took me a little longer to read than it would a lot of books because it's not story written. It's written like instructions. So I'd get through 2 chapters, and then I'd go, okay, I can't learn anything else today. My brain's loaded, so I'll pick it up again tomorrow. So it took me a couple weeks to read.
Speaking of that, guess who we're having at the expo?
Don't tell me. Kate Courtley.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but we're having, you mentioned, active shooter scenarios and things like that. I got a hold of Jimmy Meeks. Very interesting gentleman. He is he's a police officer down in Texas, and also he does a lot of presentations and talks to a lot of churches about active shooter. I had no idea how many active shooter scenarios happen in a year on church property. I had no idea on church properties. So I talked with Jimmy, and very impressive guy, very knowledgeable about active shooter scenarios, and I invited him to come to the expo and do a presentation on that, and he agreed to do so. So we're going to have a very, very impressive active shooter presentation by Jimmy Meeks.
I'm wondering if it's the same guy. There's a guy named James Meeks, I remember. Is James Meeks and Jimmy Meeks the same guy? Is he down from Waco, Texas, an instructor in Waco?
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was going by
Jimmy. I think his website is copandcross.com, I believe is his website. I guess I better look it up before I say that, but I believe it's copandcross.com. Yeah, that's it. So, anyway, yeah, he's a very impressive guy, and I'm pretty excited to have him there at the expo because he's going to be bringing a lot of knowledge about. We talked for probably an hour on active shooter scenarios. So
very cool. Yeah, I think I remember reading something about it. Yeah, he's popped up a couple of times with different things that he's done. I never heard his name called Jimmy before, but I'm obviously the stuff that I remember down in Texas, I was reading a news story, so they probably used his given name as opposed.
Maybe. And then we also will have Bill Wayburn. I've got to get in touch with him. Bill Wayburn is the police chief in Dal Worthington Gardens, and he's also going to be doing he knew Chris Kyle, And as you know, we were going to be talking with Chris Kyle, and so when I got to talking with Jimmy Meeks, Jimmy is like, hey, if you if you were talking with Chris, you might want to give Bill a call, because Bill knew him pretty well. So we swapped some Chris stories, and he's also agreed to come down to the expo. So we're pretty excited. We're gonna have some pretty good information on this one.
Very cool. Well, anyway, I just wanted to give that update on the book. I think it's I told Cade that I would read it and then let him know what I thought. So if you're listening, Cade, if not, I'll populate it on my Facebook since I just finished it. Good book, solid information, definitely worth the money spent on it. Definitely not a page turner. So it's something that you want to use as a resource, and you probably have to read over time. But it was definitely a good book to have, and I was glad that I went through the whole thing. So there you go.
Perfect.
Now I can get on to a new book.
Yeah. Nice.
Many weeks later. All right. Well, we should probably go ahead and hit a quick commercial break, and then when we come back, we will give Butch a call, and we can talk to him about Homestead General and Plowshare.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
All right. Thanks.
If everything you eat comes out of boxes stored in your freezer, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo. If you're afraid to take out your own garbage because the neighbor kids might beat you up, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
Over 50 training classes are coming to the Self-Reliance Expo. This family-friendly event focuses on traditional values and long-forgotten skills. Gardening, alternative home building, off-grid living, food preservation, cooking with the sun, self-defense classes, canine demos, and more.
If you can kill a houseplant just by looking at it, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
The Self-Reliance Expo is fun for the whole family and is the largest of its kind in the nation. Learn how to do it yourself. Learn how to defend yourself. Save money. Save a life.
If the only screwdriver you own is made of orange juice and vodka, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
It's the Self-Reliance Expo, coming soon. Find out more by going to SelfRelianceExpo.com. That's SelfRelianceExpo.com.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disastrous situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just a conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
All right, we're back with Self-Reliance Exposed, and we're going to give Butch Tyndall a call. And Butch, I believe, is the director of Plowshare Institute for Sustainable Culture. And so let's go ahead and give him a call real quick and see if we can get him on the phone. Hey, Butch, this is Bubba Da Vinci. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Sure.
So I want to kind of get started here with kind of jumping right into it. What is your title over at the Plowshare Institute for Sustainable Living?
Education Director.
Education Director. Okay. Colorado Ron and I were jumping around, and we were throwing out all kinds of titles. So, we came up with Director and Master of All. Yeah, that's what we had. That's what we came up with initially. So that's
a little bit of a stretch.
Well, come on. I mean, what's in a title? I mean,
that's correct.
We call ourselves radio hosts, but we know that that's not real true either. So we kind of play with it. Okay. So can you tell us a little bit about what is the Plowshare Institute for Sustainable Living? What is the institute?
Well, the Plowshare is a nonprofit educational organization that teaches classes as well as publishes curriculum, books, and videos for the purpose of teaching people the essential skills of life, sustainable skills, skills of sustainability. So we have classes where people can come and learn how to garden and grow their own food, how to raise a milk cow, a goat, chickens, take care of bees, make their own cheese, bread, make soap, can and preserve, as well as all of traditional crafts such as blacksmithing, woodworking, spinning and weaving, sewing, basket making, pottery. So a lot of the skills that our grandparents, great-grandparents, knew how to do in order to sustain themselves many years ago. So that's kind of a rundown of the classes and the curriculum, the things that we teach here at the Institute.
Now, how did the Institute come into being? I mean, was it a group of people that just said, we need to start teaching these skills, or do you live the lifestyle? I mean, how did you guys come into this?
Well, it's actually an outgrowth of a community that's been in existence for 40 years, and about 17 years ago, we began to develop classes because we've learned things like this. This is the way we live. This is actually, and when you come and take a canning class, you're not taking it from, you know, some college professor. You're taking it from people that actually do that. You know, not every day, but certainly all the way through the canning season. You got people that, you know, teach milk cows that, you know, have family milk cow and raise a garden. And so 17 years ago or so, because we had learned these things, and to be honest with you, we'd learned most of it the hard way through the school hard knocks, we realized that other people needed to learn and know some of these things, and we've been asked as well. But it was our desire to share a lot of this information and maybe make the learning curve a little less steep for other people than it was for us. A lot of the folks in our community, our teachers and such, are folks that learn this, as I said, through, you know, just through struggling through and with some difficulty, and we weren't raised this way. You know, we were not necessarily farmers and craftsmen from, you know, generation to generation, but rather we were people that were, you know, some of us raised in the city and learned these things. And so, as I said, we wanted to help people that maybe make their learning curve a little less steep.
Now, are all the instructors and everybody, do they live the lifestyle? Are they do they live there on the property and help do this, or are these also people that come in from other places that teach inside the courses?
Well, we have 510 acres, and not everyone lives here, but they live within, all of our instructors live within about 10 miles. It's just in the same area, all part of you know, a community that this is the life we've chosen, and to be able to live this way and support ourselves this way, you know, raising our own food, making crafts. And so, yes, the instructors are actually living this, and they're not necessarily folks that we bring in, you know, from somewhere else. Now, we do, from time to time, bring in some of the top people in a particular craft. Like, for instance, we just had a weaving class that is an internationally known weaver, weaving instructor, that this is what she's done for many, many years. And she came in and taught, and some of our instructors not only learned but also helped teach. We've done the same thing with a blacksmith, an internationally known blacksmith from actually another country, who was here last October and will be coming back again this year. So we do bring in some of the top people in those areas that will not only help our folks, our people, our instructors, to advance in their knowledge and skill level, but also brings in other people that want to, you know, go to a higher level. But the majority of the classes are taught by people that are here within our community that live this life. I mean, that, you know, the woodworkers that teach the woodworking class actually build furniture and sell it and support themselves in that way. The same with the potters or the blacksmiths or the basket makers. And so it's not just and I think that's one of the things that distinguishes us from maybe, you know, an art school or a craft, you know, some of your other craft schools, is we teach it from the perspective of a life, a whole life. The classroom is a life. And so this is not just a hobby. It's not just something that people do because it looks fun to do, although it is. This is how we sustain our lives, both with producing things in order to sell as well as raising things to feed our families.
Now, I got to go two different directions here because, you know, I was looking at your blacksmithing class, and
okay.
we were talking about how you do have experts come on. And the gentleman you have coming, which I think is Sur Sadan, he's Israeli. He actually trained under Alfred Halbermann, who was very famous in Germany for his blacksmithing. Matter of fact, there's three or four blacksmiths out of Sweden that trained under the gentleman. And so these aren't just, you know, people that you that might be master blacksmiths that you're just grabbing out of. These are people with real pedigrees in the individual art that you're choosing that you guys bring out to the class.
Exactly, yeah. Zur was also trained by Yuri Hoffe, who is an internationally known blacksmith. And so that's absolutely true. And, you know, that class was a particularly exciting class because not only our blacksmiths, and we have more than just one blacksmith, we had a number of blacksmiths, as well as other people that are not in our community that took the class, they advanced in their craft, their level of craft, by leaps and bounds. And so, yes, we were very pleased and excited to have Tsur here with us.
So, I mean, and now do you have to, I'm assuming there's criteria you have to meet in order to take that class. You have prerequisites that you do prior to going in there and doing something.
Well, that's true in some cases. It's going to vary from class to class. Zur actually took some people from, you know, pretty close to beginning blacksmiths, and so he had different levels in the class, and it depends on what we're trying to achieve with that particular class. So some of them, you know, will have prerequisites, and some of them do not. It certainly would be beneficial, and someone I think would get more out of a class with someone like Zur if they had gone through our beginning blacksmithing class and learned some of the fundamentals, as well as when Joanne Hall was here learning weaving. It's very beneficial if they had some weaving experience. They're just going to gain more from what these instructors are going to teach. But our instructors teach everything from beginning levels all the way up to advanced levels. And our woodworkers, such as Frank Straza, are recognized in their own right as master craftsmen and have won awards in several different shows across the country. Our blacksmith, Caleb Nolan, his piece that he built last year for the Texas Furniture Festival won Best of Show. And so our craftsmen as well are accomplished and award-winning.
Yeah, I definitely think I have my wife knows I have wanted to do blacksmithing for a while. I've been afraid to pick up another hobby. And when I was over in Sweden, I was lucky enough to meet a couple of master blacksmiths over there that have a, you know, it's been in their family for hundreds and hundreds of years, and they do specific tools, axes and things like that. And I picked up a book from Alfred Halbermann, and that's the only book actually on blacksmithing I have on my shelf. And so to think that the training is going on from level to level and something at that high of a skill level is available in Texas is,
right.
is just mind-blowing. And I have to say, I was lucky enough to come to your fair this last November, and you could definitely see the craftsmanship. There is just some amazing things that they have put, that your blacksmiths have put together for sale.
Well, and that's, you know, the level of craftsmanship that we teach. We hope that it also extends across the board. You know, there's also something that we see has diminished in the area of agriculture. And there was an agricultural craftsmanship many years ago. People had a sense of accomplishment and care for their animals, for their crops, for the things they fed their family. And so we teach that. We teach that same level of craftsmanship even within our agricultural skills, because the food that we feed ourselves with is only as good as the ground that it's growing in. And so we try to encourage people and help them to see, to create vibrant, healthy, biologically active soil, so that then that in turn produces very high nutrition. We call it nutrition-dense food, whether it be from animals, whether your chickens and your eggs and your milk, or the vegetables that you grow in your garden. And so it's a way of life that we like to see being restored, where people take the care to make something, whether it be for yourself or someone that you love. You take the care to make something, to grow something, you know, with that level of craft, because that's what it's all about. Is if you're going to have a high level of craft, you've got to have that level of care, you know, care for those you're making things or growing things for. And these, as I said, these are skills that people years ago had, and this is the way they sustained themselves. And as a kind of a funny story, my grandmother, who passed away a couple of years ago at 97, she was always interested in what we were doing on the farm, because she was raised on a farm. In fact, I learned a few of the things that we do, such as making sorghum syrup for my grandmother. And, you know, several years ago when we started the school, she, as I said, she was very interested in what we do on the farm. And she asked, so what's new on the farm? What are you all doing? I said, well, Granny, we've just started a school, and we're going to be teaching people, you know, how to grow their own food and can and preserve and make their own cheese and soap and bread and things like that. And she said, my goodness, why do you want to do that? Everybody knows how to do that. And, you know, in her world, in the way she grew up, that was true. Sadly, that's not the case any longer.
Well, and what we're finding is there's a resurgence of people who want to learn these things. But it's funny that, like, I left Texas about a little over a year ago, and we're up in Iowa now, where my wife has her family. And you would think, when I came up to Iowa, I thought, I'm going to be coming up here, and everybody's going to know the things that I want to know and everything else, because they live on farms, and they, you know, they're closer to the earth than everything else. And what we're finding is, even out in these rural communities, unfortunately, because of Walmarts and just how easy it is to do everything, the skills are even lost in the rural areas. I mean, it's not things that, you know, people still can, but even when they're canning real simple things. They've lost the ability to do a lot of recipes. They've lost a lot of basic skills. Farmers spend all their time using chemicals and seeds and everything else that have been genetically altered to help them get better yield, and all the basic skills of just taking care of things with your hands and your brain have kind of fallen to the wayside.
Well, we've seen that, and then sadly, you're right. It's all across the United States. We have people coming to our school from all over the United States as well as foreign countries. And it's a sad story, you know, across the board. There's pockets of things here and there, but again, sadly, many of the people in America have lost some of those, you know, basic skills to be able to provide for themselves. And that's one of the joys that we have, to be able to see people come and learn, and we get reports back from them about, you know, they send us pictures, you know, of their animals or their garden, or the, you know, a basket full of produce that came out of their garden, or, you know, something that they made. And so that gives us a great deal of joy. And there, as you said, there is a resurgence in desire of people wanting to do these things. And we're just pleased and happy and blessed to be able to help that.
Now, let me ask you, you guys are located in Waco, Texas.
North of Waco, we're out in the country, yeah.
Right. Now, how did you guys decide to start this institute and start everything out in Waco, Texas? I mean, was it, you know, you said that it's been around for 40 years. Was it just grassroots that started there and kind of just built up from that, or did you select the area for a reason?
Well, many of us are from this area. I mean, I grew up, my family, my great-grandfather's farm is just about 10 miles down the road. And so I grew up here. And many other people did as well, although we're our community, which is, as I said before, an intentional community, a Christian community of the Anabaptist tradition, which is the same tradition as the Amish, Mennonites, and Hutterites. That community actually had its start, believe it or not, in New York City, in Manhattan, and as a mission church. And over a period of time, as members of the community saw that, you know, there had to be another place, perhaps a better place to raise their children, there was just a desire to move out into a place that is more conducive to these kinds of values, not just that what are the things that we want to do with our own hands, but in order to facilitate the raising of our children and provide them with the kinds of values that we feel like would be sustainable, something that's going to be able to sustain the generations. And it's not just the know-how, but it's a belief and a values that will help that carry forward to our children, our children's children. And so, you know, we're now in our third generation, maybe even our fourth. I haven't sat down to think about that, but, you know, so it has been a process. But one of the reasons why we're here in this location is because many of us did grow up here, and we had a number of things fall in a certain way or for us to be able to purchase this particular piece of property, which is on the Brazos River, and a beautiful piece of property that's, you know, located right in the center of Texas. And as it turns out, that has been very beneficial because we have access to, you know, a lot of people to be able to share the skills that we've been fortunate and blessed to receive.
Now, let's kind of talk about this for a second. So when people hear, you know, like you said, you're about 10 miles, west of Waco?
North of Waco.
North of Waco, okay. And, you know, you're on 510 acres. This is just not 510 acres of farmland. You have created in this community a farm, your school of homesteading, which includes, like, the traditional craft village. You guys have a pottery shop, a woodworking shop. You have retail stores. You have a bakery, a restaurant, a grist mill. I mean, those are just to name a few things on the property to not only facilitate the training, but the lifestyle, but also the lifestyle you're living. I mean, you guys have rebuilt log cabins and heritage barns. You guys have greenhouses. You have herb gardens, orchards, vineyards. I mean, you guys have the full gambit. And on top of that, you guys have a husbandry school, but you have animals and pasture land and everything else, and you do the husbandry also on the property, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, the whole craft village, which is open 6 days a week, and we, again, get lots of visitors, is a craft village where you can actually come and watch the craftsmen at work. But those shops are also teaching facilities, and so that's where we teach. The craft village is our campus. And then the farm is our campus as well. So, you know, it's not just coming and book learning. I mean, you actually go out and milk a cow. If you take a family cow class, you go out and hold chickens if you're going to be taking a poultry class. But it is set in the context of a working, not just a historical living history farm. This is where people actually make things that they sell to support themselves, and where they grow food in order to sustain their family. So you're right. We're open, as I said, 6 days a week. We have lots and lots of visitors, and then every November we have a large festival on Thanksgiving weekend where people come from all over, and you know, we have even more on display. All the craftsmen bring out their wares. We have a lot of things for people to purchase. It's a popular Christmas shopping destination, but we also do demonstrations of horse farming and some even alternative energy things like, some solar, some water filtration, aquaponics. The gardens are on display. We do a barn raising where we actually raise an old timber frame barn. So there's a lot of things to see and do at the fair. But as I said, we are open to the public 6 days a week, and people come from all over to just come visit the campus here in the craft village.
Well, and I want to make sure I cover this. Like I said, we were lucky enough to come to the fair last year, And I've said this before, but I'll make sure I say it again. Bring your pocketbooks, because there's a tremendous amount of things, activities to do, lots of good food to eat, and you're not going to walk out of there empty-handed, because the school, not only are you training outsiders like me who want to come in and be educated, but this training is also going on to people in your community from the children on up, and the things that you sell in the shops and during the fair are the things that they've created throughout the year. And so you get people from, you get items that like bookmarks or candlestick holders and things like that that were created by the children, all the way through the people who've become masters at these artistries. That's accurate, right?
That's correct. I mean, that for our children, it is a culmination of the school year. And so they're making things and projects throughout the year in their training, not only academically. I mean, we also have children's writings and school projects and such as that on display, but the things that they make with their hands, because, for instance, our blacksmith is a young man, he's in his early 30s, who had gone and started as a teenager, or maybe even before that, just having a desire to do a few things in blacksmithing, and now he's gone completely through our program of teaching and is now an instructor. And you were mentioning Sweden. He actually has been in Sweden, trained how to make axes like they make in Grans Fors. And so he's gone through that, and we try to provide the opportunity for all of the children in the community to be able to go through that. And so they present things, they either for sale or for display at the fair, and then, as you said, all the way up to the things that the master craftsman built. So it's a culmination of our year. It's kind of a harvest festival where people bring the things that they've been working on throughout the year. And then there's lots of activities for children that come and visit at the fair. We, you know, have hands-on activities where they could make, you know, a little metal spoon with the blacksmith, or they could weave, as you said, a bookmark with the weavers, or they could dip candles and make a candle, or make a soap ball, or, you know, they go through the animal pens. We have a petting pen. And so there's lots of activities for children, lots of good food, and lots of opportunity to learn about this way of life, and, you know, take a horse-drawn hay ride, or see, you know, big draft mules plowing the field. So it's a very fun, exciting time for all of us, since it's like a harvest festival at the end of the year. And these things were not uncommon, again, 100 so years ago. These were things where people came together. They would have these fairs and festivals in order to share things, and what you learned, maybe you share with someone else, and they would share what they had learned. And so there's this tremendous exchange of ideas and just relationship and getting to know one of people. It's a little bit like a, you know, a big festival and family reunion all rolled into one. And then on top of that, we have a number of seminars and educational venues at the fair as well, where people can come and sit for a talk or a seminar on a particular area of sustainability.
Well, I can tell you it was a completely enjoyable experience. It was packed, and we'll definitely be going back again, because it was just an amazing experience to go ahead and see. And my daughters had a great time.
Wonderful. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Now, I want to make sure I get a couple of things in. Now, you're going to be at the Self-Reliance Expo April 26th and 27th. And
that's correct.
PlowShare has a booth there, and you'll be doing some basics classes at the Self-Reliance Expo. Can you talk about which classes you'll be doing at the expo?
Yes, I believe there may be a couple of others that we haven't set the schedule for, but I know that there will be classes on just beginning beekeeping, if anyone's interested in learning a more sustainable way of keeping bees. There will also be a class on water filtration that we teach, and you know, ways that you can filter the water for your homestead, particularly making or filtering for potable water for drinking. So those are a couple. I think there's some kitchen skills classes, maybe a cheese making and soap making. So, yes, we are going to be there doing seminars and sharing some things about that. and about this way of life. We'll have a booth there that you can come and learn what classes that we teach, talk with some of the folks that work in PlowShare, pick up a schedule of our classes. You can even register right there at our booth. And then next, I don't know exactly how it's laid out, but I know also at the Self-Reliant Expo that our Homestead General Store will be there, and that, whereas PlowShare is a nonprofit educational organization, we have a for-profit business, and this is the Homestead General Store, and they will be there with all of the different things that someone would need to set up a, their own sustainable homestead, whether it be grain mills or agricultural tools, spades and forks and scythes and solar ovens and water filters and, all the things that someone would need in order to have a homestead. So that's a support business to the PlowShare, because as people come and learn things, then they need the tools to do that. And so that's what we provide through the Homestead General Store.
And just so people know, Homestead General has been with us. This is their second year, and they always do tremendous business at our show. And when they first came the first year, I convinced them to do a bigger booth, because I said, you want to spread this stuff out and get a chance to engage the customer. And it was so amazing that, people going in there, and once they start touching the things, they realize how much they want them. And it's things that you probably would have found in a general store 40, 50 years ago, but you're not going to find commonplace in any store nowadays.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of the products are products that we use. And so, like if you're looking for a grain mill and you've got all these options that are out there, well, these are the grain mills we actually use and have, we try to carry what we would use in our own homes. And so that's the products that you'll find there, a scythe and how to harvest the wheat. These are a lot of products, as you said, that you would have seen in a store maybe many years ago, but they're harder to find today.
Now, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about, where PlowShare is a very hands-on school. You guys apparently have realized that there is a large population of people like me who, A, might not have just the time to come out to Waco, Texas and do the hands-on, but are still very interested in participating and learning the classes. So you guys have started online courses.
That's correct. The Sustain Life videos that are on our website at sustainlife.org. This is a very new project for us. It's less than a year old. And what we realized is that not everybody necessarily wants to come to Texas. Certainly many people don't want to come here in August and September or July, but for some reason, as you just said, you live in Iowa and it's difficult to get down to Texas, and there is an increasing demand for these skills and knowledge. And so we began to put together the Sustain Live videos where people can go online, and it's on a subscription basis. They can take the courses. You can sign up on a subscription basis and download or view online courses in beekeeping, gardening, woodworking, blacksmithing. We hope eventually to have the full gamut of classes that we teach here online. And you could go through from the beginning, and then there'll be project classes. And that's a new project. And there are different levels of it, but that's you can see that online at sustainlife.org.
Yeah, I actually went online, and I'm going to do the premium membership. I think it looks fantastic. I just wish you guys would have go ahead and buy a one-time membership, and you were done, because I'm horrible with monthly things. But it's definitely worthwhile for someone like me who probably gets to Texas 2-3 times a year, but not usually long enough to take a 1-to-6-day class.
And is part
of the trip. So this is fantastic.
All right. Well, yeah, and that's, again, that's something that's new. So as, you know, if you go online and see the things that we have to offer now, just know that we're putting things, new things up, you know, on a weekly basis. And so as they get another one completed, they get it up there, and it's going to hopefully continue to be fresh and new as we add things.
Now, the last thing I want to make sure I cover is, you guys have a quarterly journal. My wife and I picked it up when we were out at the show last time, and that's Sustain Life magazine or journal.
Right, Sustain Life journal, uh-huh.
And that's something that people can subscribe to also, that covers information and their stories in there and practical tips and things like that inside the journal, correct?
That's correct, yes. It comes out once a quarter, and, you know, we have, you know, all kinds of things, all kinds of articles in there from, you know, we might have something there, Meet the Teacher, about how did this teacher get involved in this craft, and tells their story. And then it might have a little tidbit in there, or a story about how to do something, or how to grow something, or how to preserve something. And then stories just about, you know, more cultural, about, you know, agricultural communities and the importance of agricultural communities, the importance of an agrarian way of life, you know, just all of that, things that are not only necessary but interesting for a sustainable life.
All right. Well, Butch, I know you have to go. You had a very limited time, and I appreciate you jumping back on with us today.
Well, thank you.
Let's go ahead and let people know. First of all, they'll be able to find you at the Self-Reliance Expo, April 26th and 27th, and Plowshare will be there doing classes and have ways for people to sign up for classes, a list of classes, and you can talk to people and understand not only what the lifestyle is with the community, but how you can participate and learn how to get this type of things in your own life and become more sustainable. And then they can reach you how to go ahead and look online to find this information.
Well, it's sustainlife.org is the website. And then from there, there's links to all the different things. The videos are there. The calendar of classes and the class descriptions for all of that are there. But there's also links to the Homestead General Store, the Homestead Gristmill, and some of the other auxiliary businesses that support and help the Plowshare and are integral to the Plowshare. So if you go to sustainlife.org, that's the simplest way, and you can find out all the information online.
Wonderful. Well, we're looking forward to seeing you at the show, Butch, and we wish you the best of luck, and hopefully I'll actually have some time to take some of the classes, although we usually get pretty busy when the show gets started.
Good. Well, we'll see you in Arlington then.
All right. You take care, sir, and you have an enjoyable weekend.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Jay Stephen Stoller for Backwoods Home Magazine. If you like the program you're listening to right now, consider subscribing to Backwoods Home Magazine. Call 1-800-835-2418 or go to www.backwoodshome.com and click on the subscribe button. Every issue of Backwoods Home Magazine is over 100 pages, packed with solid self-reliance advice by experts who tell you how to survive in these unpredictable times. Call 1-800-835-2418.
All right, welcome back to Self-Reliance Exposed with Colorado Ron and Bubba DaVinci. We were talking with Butch Tindall. He is the Director of Education for the Plowshare Institute for Sustainable Culture, which is based out of Waco, Texas. And you can find information on Plowshare at www.sustainlife.org. And that will have their blog, list of school classes for hands-on, their online courses, events, and calendar. And again, Plowshare will be at the Self-Reliance Expo, which is happening April 26th and 27th in Arlington, Texas. You can go to www.selfreliancexpo.com to find further information. That's it for this week. Colorado Ron had to run to the airport, as we mentioned at the top of the show. He's heading to Nashville, Tennessee to go support another event. As always, you can find information from Backwoods Home Magazine at www.backwoodshome.com. Let's try that again, www.backwoodshome.com. Self Reliance Expo is www.selfreliancexpo.com. Our Facebook pages, you can visit us at Backwoods Home Mag. That's after Facebook, that forward slash. You can see the Self Reliance Expo at Self Reliance Expo, all one word, and Bubba Da Vinci with forward slash Bubba Da Vinci. As always, we hope that you enjoyed the show, and we hope to hear from you next week. Next week, we'll be talking to some people about spring again. Hopefully, we will be able to talk about chickens and preparing for your gardens for spring, and we'll have a few more vendors that will be at the expo to let you know what they'll be doing. So, as always, keep prepping, be safe, and we'll talk to you real soon.
We're from North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.